This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, this is Frida Liu, listening to Open for Business. Pumase is an asset management and asset development company based out of California with a focus on renewable energy, water, and waste sectors, and geographic focus on South Asia and Southeast Asia. I'm speaking to founder and CEO Kiran Jetwa, who is a proponent of innovative business models that incorporate economic, social, and environmental triple bottom line strategies. And Kiran has contributed as the investor chair to California and a mentor in Clean Tech Open, the largest clean technology competition in the US and globally. And Pumase is also here in Malaysia. So good morning, Kiran.
Good morning, Frida. How are you?
I'm good. So we'll go back a bit of history. How did you get involved and interested in this whole area of clean technology?
So I've been in the high-tech space in Silicon Valley, California, Silicon Valley, for a very long time, 20 plus years. And then we had the financial crisis where the markets went down. And that's when the dot-com bubble also burst in Silicon Valley to some extent. And that's where I moved into clean technology. And it was a natural transition from being high-tech into clean technology. So at that time, it was more about clean technology, so R&D companies doing some research and development in the clean technology space. So there is an organization called the Clean Tech Open, which is a business accelerator in Silicon Valley, and now it is actually very global. So I basically joined them as a mentor and also the investor chair. And the concept was basically helping startup companies doing R&D in clean technology space, helping them with their business strategy, their funding strategy, their sales strategy, marketing strategy. And so we would walk them through the whole process, because most of the time these companies are run by entrepreneurs who are more engineering types.
Right.
And so they know engineering inside out, but they don't sometimes may not have the business skills. And so what we would do is mentor them with all the strategies to help them get their companies ahead. And I also joined a few of those companies.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was going through that process, I realized quickly that clean technology is somewhere very unique. It's not high tech. If you think about high tech, software, the life cycles of product development is very short. 6 months, you can have a product up and running. You can develop an app on your iPhone or Android or whatever, right? And it's up and running.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like a biotech, which takes 15 years, 20 years to develop some medication for cancer. We are still researching for cancer, right? Clean tech is somewhere in the middle. I mean, again, another thing is high tech requires very low capital funding. You raise $100,000, $200,000, you're up and running. Biotech, you need billions of dollars, millions of dollars. So compared life cycle and also funding, clean tech is somewhere in the middle, right? You still need some more research, I mean, development work. It's not 6 months, 1 year. It definitely needs 2, 3 years, 5 years. Funding-wise also, it's in the millions of dollars. It's not 100,000 or billions, right? It's somewhere in the middle. The other thing also I realized quickly is, at least at that time, this was 10 years ago, that if you want to be in the clean tech space, you cannot be a pure vendor. You cannot be a technology company and say, I developed some product, and now people will come and buy my product. You had to actually create a prototype, because this is real assets, like a solar, right? If you develop a solar company, you have to showcase your product. If you do an energy storage company, you have to showcase, have a commercial viable prototype that is up and running. People can come take a look at it. And then if you come to create that commercially viable product or a prototype, you need funding. And that funding gap was there. And so I quickly realized that there's a funding gap. And so using my own funds, I started Pumase, which basically puts in the development capital for projects to be started, at least commercially viable projects, right? And slowly, slowly moved into actual project development. So now what Pumase is doing is developing products. We are an asset developer, right? And so what that means is, for example, solar. So we have a 47 megawatt solar project in Perak that is now operational. Okay. Before that, Fumasa was quite active in India. And so we had three separate JVs in India where we were doing, one JV was focused on the waste, municipal solid waste to power. There we were developing projects that were 150 tons per day of municipal solid waste to power. And the highest capacity was around 500 tons per day. Another project or another JV that we did was basically focused on pure solar and wind. So this would be 100, 200 megawatts of solar and wind, utility scale, what we call. The third one was what we call firm power or integrated power. So that's where we combine renewable power of wind and solar with baseload power generation that is also renewable, like hydro, biomass, combine that with battery storage to generate power that is from renewable sources, and that is 24/7. Okay. So there we were developing, we had a pipeline of 1 gigawatt, 1 to 2 gigawatts of projects.
So the one you mentioned in Malaysia, this was the one of the winning developers in our second largest scale solar tender round, right, by the Energy Commission in 2017. That's the one, right? Okay. You know, okay, so there is a focus in South Asia and Southeast Asia for you, right? And obviously, you feel that this is where we need it most in terms of growth. I mean, you know, why the focus here?
So I follow GDP. I chase the GDP growth. So if you look at GDP growth, right, in OECD countries or in the US, at that time or even now, right now, the GDP growth is very low, 0.5%, maybe less than 1%, right? Whereas Southeast Asia is booming right now. No doubt right now because of COVID, things have changed a little bit, right? Mm. But what has happened at a macro level is there is a trade war going on between US and China, right? And who is the beneficiary? Southeast Asian countries, right? So all the, like right now, you are seeing a boom in Vietnam. We are seeing a boom in Malaysia, Philippines, Indonesia. They're all seeing the benefits of this trade war between US and China, right? But that is happening now. This was when I moved here 7 years ago. It wasn't there. The trade wasn't there as yet. But that time it was pure GDP growth. And I look at it, and as you know, power is the bloodline of any economy. So as the GDP grows, so does the demand for power, right? And so Southeast Asian countries have a chance to leapfrog. Instead of developing coal and fossil fuel-based power plants, you can leapfrog and go straight into renewables. And now what is happening? This is happening just 6 months, is hydrogen.
Mm.
Right? So hydrogen is becoming quite important, quite interesting. And so people, not people, but countries are developing hydrogen economy strategies. And so Fumasa has also started developing hydrogen projects. What that means is, I mean, if you know about anything about hydrogen, there are different flavors or different colors of hydrogen. One is gray hydrogen, which is being produced today, which is straight from natural gas. The other one is blue hydrogen, where you take the gray hydrogen, it generates a lot of carbon dioxide. There's a lot of harmful emissions. If you can sequester that carbon emissions through CCS, then you're creating hydrogen that is a little bit more, a little bit better than gray hydrogen, right? And that is known as blue hydrogen. If you develop hydrogen through electrolysis of water using renewable power, that is known as green hydrogen because it has zero emissions. So what Fumasa is doing these days is we have been in the solar industry for a long time, renewable energy for a long time. So what we are doing now is using renewable power to generate green hydrogen that can then help countries like Malaysia to decarbonize its industries. So there are a couple of sectors, right? Industry is one sector.
Mm-hmm.
Malaysia has cement. Malaysia has steel industries, ceramic industries. So all of those industries can use the hydrogen and get on a path to decarbonize themselves, right? So today, you cannot go 100% hydrogen because otherwise you'll have to change your whole equipment and your operations will come to a halt. So that's not a good strategy. So what we would do or what we would recommend them is you blending. So today, if you are using natural gas, you blend in 5% of hydrogen into that. You can actually blend up to 20%. Without having to change your equipment. So what we can do that way is put them on a path, on a roadmap to basically start decarbonizing. And in 10 years' time, it can become 100%.
Right. So this is very interesting. So you're helping them making that transition slowly, but at the same time, they will always talk about how it, does it benefit them financially to make that transition. You know, I mean, everybody, yes, it's great for the environment, but at the end of the day, right, we always want to look at the bottom line. Am I making money from this?
No, so that's where it's becoming very interesting, the whole dynamics, right? I mean, we initially started off with the triple bottom line model. So what Fumasa has done is created a model that we call triple bottom line. And now we have actually made it into a quadruple bottom line. So what you are saying is absolutely correct. We have to be conscious about environment. We have to be conscious about society. We have to be conscious about governance. However, sustainability, which is profits, drives all the decisions, right?
Okay, and we hold that thought because I want to go deep into that in just a moment. I'm here with Kiran Jetwa from Fumasa. Stay tuned to Open for Business, BFM 89.9.
Before Friday materializes, BFM 89.9.
Good morning, this is Frida Liu. You're listening to Open for Business. I'm here with Kiran Jetwa from Fumasa. We're talking about the whole idea, quadruple bottom line that meets sustainability and ethics, right? So it's you were talking about, because one of the things that I saw was that you have developed a triple bottom line, right, for evaluating projects and investments. And the purpose of the triple bottom line is to evaluate projects holistically by measuring the sustainability and ethical impact of investments. And then you just told me earlier on now there's quadruple. So tell me more.
So basically, at the end of the day, we need to be conscious about what we are doing to the environment. Right now with climate change, we are seeing thunderstorms, we are seeing lightnings, we are seeing flooding everywhere, right? And the intensity of it is increasing. And why is it increasing? If we look at it very thoroughly, it's because of the higher temperatures, there's more evaporation. Because there is more evaporation, the storms are becoming more intense, more fierce, right? And we are seeing this everywhere. So we have to be conscious. Now, going back to your question about sustainability is key, which means profits drive everything, right? Which is great. Yes, definitely, it is important. However, we as a society, we need to make a decision. What we pay for our energy, and are we conscious about the environmental impact that we have? Now, even if we don't think about that, right, and say, okay, nope, all I care about is profits. What is happening right now in the global scene is OECD countries, these are European countries, US, they are all thinking about what is called carbon border tax. Okay, so what will end up happening is if you are a company developing some product in Malaysia and you are exporting it to Europe, for example, they will want to see what is your carbon footprint. Okay, and if let's say you are a steel company, you are developing steel, they will ask you what is your carbon footprint for every ton of steel that you produce. And in the steel industry, 70 to 80% of your OPEX is power. And if you are taking in power that is fossil thermal based, fossil fuel based power, your carbon emissions are high. And so what these countries will do is they will put a tax on your steel that you are now exporting to European countries. So there are two things that will happen. Number one, you will become less competitive, right? The other thing is your whole market is gone now. So Southeast Asian countries that are benefiting from the US-China trade war is going to lose that competitive edge if we are not conscious about our carbon emissions. So talking about sustainability, it actually goes very long now because carbon emissions are going to become very important and we have to be conscious. We'll have to, and the other part is ESG, right? So I don't know if you recently saw the news about Shell, about Chevron, right? Their limited partners basically are forcing them to change their strategy. So here are oil and gas companies like Shell, Chevron, BP that have now said they will be 100% carbon free by 2050. They have set a deadline now. How is that going to be possible? They have to pivot completely, right? You are in the oil and gas industry. That is your bread and butter. And now you are going to say that, nope, in 30, 40 years' time, we are going to change into something else. So steel cement industries here has to start thinking about those things.
It's so interesting, right? You have to show it where it hurts, right? In the pocket. And that's, you know, that's when they'll start paying attention, right? That's the harsh reality. Now, you also have the Fumase Fund I. Tell me more about this.
So this is basically the development fund that I had mentioned. This is my own funds that we put together. Right. And this fund is basically used to do the development activity. So if you think about a project development, any project, right? Let's say the solar project, it has three phases. The first phase is a development phase. The second phase is construction phase. The third phase is operational phase, right? So operational phase is where the project is up and running and you are generating power and selling power to T&B. The construction phase is basically the construction of everything. But before you can start construction, you need to do development. So development is where you go look at sites, land, figure out which site will work, maybe get into discussions, negotiation with the landowners, put down some deposits, go and do your permitting. All of that activity happens. That is development phase. And now if we bring in the LSS, the large-scale solar tender, then this is also when we do the bid for the tender. And then the government, ST, essentially comes back and says you are a winner or not a winner. Mm-hmm. And after that, you go through a PPA signing process. So all of that requires some funding. It's not as large funding as the construction equity funding, but still funding is needed. And this is where Fumase comes in and puts in that funding.
Okay. So, you know, just going back to your, you know, your framework, right? The sustainable investment framework, you take into account three main factors. This is project economic returns, environmental impact, and social impact, right? Now, is it possible that a project can have a positive environmental impact and not have a positive social impact? Wouldn't it all come hand in hand anyway?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
So let's take pure solar project, right? And this is where we are also pivoting to some extent, and we'll come back to that later. But let's take a pure solar project. I'm not talking about manufacturing solar panels, right? That is upstream. So I'm just developing a solar project. I buy my solar panels from somebody and then construct a project. So what happens over there? I hire an EPC company, engineering, procurement, and construction company, who will come. They will hire all the workers to do the construction of my project. Okay. After the project is complete, how many people do I employ as a project developer, sponsor? Not very many. I have a few security guards. I have a few maintenance people, mm-hmm. right? So I do hire a few people, but it's not to the same level as the EPC company that is hiring 1,000 workers, for example, right? My environmental impact is good, is very high because I'm a solar project, but my societal impact is low because I'm not hiring hundreds of people. I will hire only maybe 50, 100 people. I am making an indirect impact in terms of, because the EPC companies now have projects like mine, so they have to hire a lot of people. So I have an indirect impact, but I don't have a direct impact on the society. I don't create a local economy in that remote region, right? So now what we are thinking Fumase is doing is solar panels occupy a lot of land. Typically, it's around 3 acres per megawatt, right? And it is always going to be a single use. And there is always this clash that you are using up agricultural land to put up solar. Now, solar is always good because of the environmental impact, but it is only a single use. So what we are thinking of doing is actually raising the solar panels. Solar panels are typically very close to the ground, maybe around 3 feet above the ground. Instead, what we'll end up doing is incurring higher capex, because we have to put up the framework that will go higher. But if you can raise it up, let's say 10 feet, now I have space under the solar panels that I can use for something. Okay, so what we are doing, our new strategy basically is going to be, and this is not done anywhere in the world actually. People are still experimenting, by the way. Because what happens is if you want to grow something, you need sunlight, right? But because the solar panels block the sunlight, it becomes a shaded. So now you can only grow certain things that can grow in shaded environment, right? So we are experimenting, and this is, there are different companies doing different things in different parts of the world, trying to figure out, can we combine what is called as, now is there's actually a term, agri-solar, which basically tries to figure out, can we combine agriculture of some sort with solar to develop, to have two dual use of land. The other thing that we are also looking into is, can we combine aquaculture, just like agriculture, which might be better because now we can have fisheries, like we can have tilapia, shrimp, something that we can cultivate under the solar panels. The other thing we are also looking into is chicken farming, right? So another thing is livestock, lamb, goat, which can actually act as dual because now those lamb and goat, they will eat the grass underneath the solar panels. So I don't have to do as much maintenance work. So we are looking into all of those different things to figure out, can we have a dual use, triple use of the same land? Once we do that, what happens? And this goes back to our quadruple bottom line impact. We are not farmers.
Right.
We are not fishermen. We are not livestock managers. We don't know how to do that. So what we'll do? We'll hire local people to do that work for us, right? So that creates a local economy now, right? At the same time, it creates, so now if you look at society in general, we need milk, we need food, water, right? Fish. We can all have all of that locally in that whatever number of acres that we have. And we have power that is renewable power now.
So who would come to you? Would it be governments? Would it be, I guess, larger companies that would come to you for advice? I'm just thinking of who your customers would be, your clients would be.
For the power?
Fumase is a company.
For Fumase as a company, one example I can give you is there is this one company in Indonesia. They are trying to develop smart cities, okay? And so they are talking to me right now to see if I can develop a strategy for them for the smart city. And that is actually another angle that Fumase is also always looking at. With our background in all different forms, like waste to energy, water, wastewater treatment, power, we take a very holistic approach to anything. And so if you think about it as a smart city or an industrial park, they all have power needs. We can supply power from renewable power, right? If it's an industry and they have any kind of a furnace, boiler that needs some heat, we can supply them with hydrogen, right? And the hydrogen helps them decarbonize their industry. So now you are looking at an industry that is decarbonizing from their power needs and also from their heat needs because hydrogen is no emissions, right? Now this industry or a smart city produces waste. Waste could be in the form of municipal solid waste, right? We can take that and generate a waste-to-energy power plant, right? They have wastewater that comes out, that effluent. Typically in Malaysia, people just dump it into the rivers. Mm. And so the rivers are all polluted, right? Why can't we treat that water and reuse it? So now what you have is a circular economy. A very holistic approach to decarbonize a smart city or an industrial park or a remote region, right? And so they are coming to Fumase basically to develop that strategy because we have that expertise.
Right. And how has, you know, the pandemic affected things, whether it's your company or progress in what we're trying to do here? Has it heightened it or, you know?
So the awareness of climate change has definitely heightened. That has definitely gone up, right? However, during the pandemic, the need for power dropped quite a bit. So that's okay. I mean, from our case, for a solar project, it doesn't matter much because the power that we produce is always being used. So it doesn't affect that much. But for TNB, the overall consumption is reduced. But that is temporary. The other long-term, maybe not long-term, but a little bit more impact for us is right now because of movement restrictions. We cannot go anywhere. So one of the first starting points of any project is site selection. But I can't go to the sites. I can't go to Kedah or Perlis or Perak or wherever, right? I cannot travel. And so I cannot look at sites. So everything is at a standstill right now. Same thing goes for the LSS tender. The tender was supposed to come out early this year, but no doubt because of the political issue and also because of COVID, it has been postponed. So the whole process has been brought to a standstill right now.
Okay. This whole interview has been very enlightening for me. Is there anything else that you'd like to bring up that I haven't covered yet?
So one of the things, we were going back to your question about sustainability and profits, right? And if I think about hydrogen economy, let's look at the solar economy as a comparison. So 10 years back, Malaysia as a country did not have a solar industry. What we had was, so to spur that whole industry, Malaysian authorities, there is an authority named as SEDA, Sustainable Energy Development Authority, which sits under the Energy Commission, right? They came up with a feed-in tariff program, FIT program, where the tariff rates were higher, higher than what they should be, essentially. And the reason for doing that was basically to spur the whole economy, the solar economy, right? And so people got interested, they started developing projects, and people got the knowledge. Before 10, 15 years ago, there people did not, in Malaysia, did not have the expertise of solar, right? So we had to have foreigners come in and teach, essentially. Now we are at a stage, and where we started in 2016, 2017, the first LSS program, large-scale solar program, right? And this was an open auction. The tariff rate, reference tariff rate, was around 41 cents Malaysian ringgit, and the average bid tariff rate was around 41, 42 cents as well, right? LSS2, the bid tariff rate came down to around 36 cents. LSS3, that bid tariff rate, the reference tariff rate also dropped to 23 cents, but the bid tariff rate dropped to 23 cents. LSS4, which was last year, the bid came down to around 18 cents average, right? So what you can see is the cost of power start dropping. And that has been happening also because the solar industry as a whole, the solar panels became cheaper. So EPC cost became cheaper, your capex became lower. But initially, the government had to do something, provide some incentives to spur the whole economy, right? Similarly, in hydrogen right now, we are in the hydrogen economy. The government needs to basically spur that economy by doing something. And this is not just a Malaysia problem. This is a global challenge. So there is a mechanism called CFD, which is Contract for Difference, right? And people globally, Europe, US, everybody, are looking into a CFD mechanism where the government becomes like a broker in between. Because what happens? Hydrogen is kind of a commodity now. And that's where people start talking about, hey, if it's comparable to natural gas, then I'll use it. Otherwise, I won't use it, right? Now, as a developer, as a project developer, I produce hydrogen. But to make my project bankable, I need a long-term offtake agreement with somebody. Otherwise, the banks will not finance me, right? So I need a long-term agreement. On the flip side, the offtaker, they know that just like the solar industry, the cost is coming down, the cost of hydrogen will also come down. So I will wait. I don't want to buy today. I'll wait. Or I will take a contract which is as short as possible. So they want very short contracts. We want very long contracts. So there's a mismatch.
Right.
Also, the pricing based upon our cost today, which is high, we need a higher cost for hydrogen. Whereas they are comparing with natural gas. So they want as low as possible. People keep talking about $2 per kg, which is not possible today anywhere in the world, right? So that's where the government comes in and becomes sort of a broker. Government gets into a long-term contract with the generators, like us, developers, and then they give it to the off-takers, maybe on a short term. So that kind of mechanism people are discussing today globally in Europe as well. And there may be some kind of carbon tax. That is another thing. Because unless they, meaning government across the world, put up a carbon tax, there is no level playing field, right? People will always compare, hey, I don't care about my carbon. But if they don't, then they are emitting carbon, right? So that there needs to be some level playing field for everybody. And so Europe has come up with $50 per ton, and this has already started. And they are predicting that in the next 10 years, it's going to go up to $100, $150 per ton, right? Once that happens, then things become a lot more level playing field. Combine that with what I was mentioning earlier about the carbon cross-border tax, right? All of those are going to start playing a role.
And this will be the future. When it hurts the pocket, people will start paying attention. Thanks for spending time with me. I've been speaking to Kiran Jetua from Fumase. You've been listening to Open for Business, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.